You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
January the 13th, 2020. How did you spend your weekend? I know for two families, there was a knock on the door, and they opened it, and there were military officers and military chaplains standing in front of them to officially notify them that their loved one had been killed in Afghanistan. A roadside bomb ripping through an army vehicle Saturday in southern Afghanistan, injuring two others. And yes, that bomb, that IED, was put there, if not directly, indirectly, through proxies, Soleimani, the Iranian military general, which we wiped out last week. But he still has bombs scattered everywhere and proxy agents carrying out his wishes. In the meantime, in Iran, you've got protesters in the street shouting, not death to America, death to the Iranian leaders. And Iran is responding by putting soldiers in the front, firing live ammunition, shooting some of the protesters, killing some. This is just the latest of these. It's been going on for a while. It's escalating now since Iran admitted the other day that, yes, it was the one that shot down that jetliner leaving Tehran airport. We're going to be joined later this hour by retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood with the Heritage Foundation. You want to hear his take on the Iran situation now and all the noise that continues to circulate and the wailing and the crying of the liberals and the mainstream media that we killed Soleimani, the most feared terrorist in the world, more so than even Osama bin Laden, responsible for 600 American deaths, and now you can add two more, and 6,000 attacks on U.S. and allied forces. Soleimani is dead. Good. Also coming up in the next 2 hours, Nancy Pelosi is absolutely lost. She is like a canoe in the middle of the ocean, taking on water, not sure which way to go, no life jacket, and I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I've got these articles of impeachment. Do I send them over? Do I hold them? Is it better to hold on? Is it going to hurt the Democrat Party moving forward? Am I helping one candidate or the other? She doesn't know what to do. But I'll tell you this, over the weekend, when she was on a mainstream media program and they were talking about the Iranian protesters, she could not find the words to support the protesters condemning Iran. That's the kind of leadership in the Democrat Party right now, and it's not going to get any better. Then we have someone claiming there's a mad bomber in the White House. They're referring to President Trump. By the way, an attack on a MAGA cap wearer recently, now leading to some criminal charges. Good. We need to have that happen a lot more. And word coming out that FBI Director Comey, when he was serving that position, he's the one who pushed for that nasty story of golden showers with the prostitutes and the golden showers. That was to hurt Trump, and he knew what he was doing, and he pushed for it over and over again. We'll get into that. And also, we're trying to clean up the FBI, make things better in the FISA court, and yet they have appointed a former Obama administration lawyer to do that. Are you kidding? Oh, here's a point. If you like to hike or camp outdoors, you're a racist. You are a racist. I want to share an article written by a black woman and her attitude toward you being white and racist if you like to camp. And she says, I like to camp and I'm black. We'll get into that story. Oh, Cory Booker today stepping forward and saying, I'm withdrawing from the race. No big surprise there, Cory Booker. You were on the short list to go out in a hurry anyway, and now he has. And now you also have Tom Steyer still running. The billionaire investor, Democrat 2020 candidate, wants Americans to provide cheap housing to illegal immigrants. He says a Steyer administration will ensure that all undocumented communities have access to affordable and safe housing. I would imagine we've got many American citizens right now would like to have affordable and safe housing. Why doesn't he care about Americans? And that would be specifically minority Americans, because they think they've got their vote locked up. So they're trying to get illegals who will be voting in various places. They once again turn their back on Americans. My friend, lock and load. We're ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Wellington Environmental specializes in making your world safer and can save you a lot of unnecessary fear. One client called frantic. A test sample for an indoor swimming pool showed evidence of Legionella bacteria. Well, that meant the entire pool would have to be drained, then washed with acid. But Wellington Environmental found the pool was safe. The test sample was a false positive. In another case, a homeowner said a buyer had just backed out of a closing. The building inspector claimed he had found evidence of mold in a closet. That could be scary. Could certainly cost the deal. Wellington Environmental found it was not mold. It was traces of asphalt from the wheels of a suitcase. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beale Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beale, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
There's no doubt I've seen the intelligence that he was plotting something large and something very dangerous, whether it happened in a matter of weeks or a matter of days.
Those are the words of Senator Tom Cotton, appearing on the Mark Levin program over the weekend, talking about Soleimani, saying it was very clear that we were going to have, attacks from Soleimani at some point. Now, new word has surfaced today that President Trump had decided something like 7 months ago, to decide that we would take out Soleimani when we could, and we did, and yet the left and the media continue to blame Trump and say, why did you do that? You shouldn't have, you know, it's not fair, really. Let me really quickly recap the last few weeks. You could go all the way back to the beginning of Soleimani, but let's go to this point here. You recall, we had rockets fired into two Iraqi bases where we had U.S. troops. Our response then was to fire back, send fighter jets against the source of those rockets, and we killed something like 25 terrorists. Then their next step, they sent protesters to our embassy in Baghdad, trying to get in, assault, and threaten our embassy personnel. And President Trump was not going to let them carry on as if it were a Hillary Clinton, Obama, Benghazi thing all over again. He ordered in 100 Marines, Apache helicopters, and put it down. But then you had the Iranian military general, Soleimani, believing that he was so much in firm control and command that he could safely fly into Iraq at the Baghdad airport and he could take care of additional charges, assaults, violence against U.S. personnel. But he got greeted
by drone-fired missiles, taking him out. That's why we've gotten to this point, and you've got protesters in the streets of Iran right now repeatedly shouting death to the Ayatollah, death to the Iranian leadership, because they're tired of it. They want an end to all of this. And when those rockets started falling around our military base as they fired again at our facilities, and the president withheld after this, after the death of Soleimani, we took no additional action. They fired again upon our military facilities, and we did nothing. The president showing proper restraint at that point. We had no loss of life. But I'm looking at an article from Al-Asad Air Base in Iraq talking about a six-foot-tall U.S. staff sergeant who said, I was taking the best cover I could, held onto my gun, put my head down, tried to find a happy place, started singing to my daughters in my head because I thought a missile could be dropped on me at any point. I just hoped that whatever happened, it was quick. I was 100% ready to die. Thank goodness he didn't. But that, again, was still another attack on U.S. forces. We could have fired back immediately, but we didn't. So the president takes a reserved step, and yet the mainstream media and the liberals who vacillate between calling Trump rogue, out of control, a madman, chaotic, then turn around condemning him for being too soft. Now, this whole issue about Soleimani and the threat he posed, those across the Mideast recognize he was not just a threat to U.S. and U.S. forces and Israel, but to various countries throughout the Middle East. The words of Senator Tom Cotton.
Qasem Soleimani was a sadistic terrorist mastermind, and there is no country in the Middle East whose citizens have not suffered from his depredations. You mentioned in Syria, he's largely responsible for Bashar al-Assad still being in power and killing hundreds of thousands of Syrians. Just at the end of last year, more than 1,000 Iranians were killed by their own security forces as they protested against their government. Qasem Soleimani was responsible for those as well.
You heard the senator from Arkansas, Republican, point out that Soleimani was responsible for killing his own citizens when they were protesting in the streets, and that's continuing to happen. Now, if you look at what's happening in Iran now, you've got protesters daring to step out, and I mean they take their lives in their hands when they do it because the Iranian government, the military leaders, are trying to hold on to what they have. I'm looking at a piece written by a Muslim scholar on the Iranians, and he's saying clearly, at this point, the regime is in its, quote, most fragile and precarious time probably since 1979. He said they've had a disastrous outcome to their attempt of intimidating the U.S. That's because President Trump is in office. He didn't add that. I did. Their attempts on the embassy in Baghdad failed. That's because Trump is in office. He didn't say that. I did. They had Soleimani decapitated. That's because President Trump is in office. I'm adding it. He didn't. They had to admit that they shot down their own commercial airliner, killing hundreds of people, 83 Iranians. Many Iranians lost multiple family members. And shooting down that jetliner, that is something that is definitely causing problems inside Iran. This was a Ukrainian aircraft shot down minutes after it took off from Tehran's international airport on Wednesday. In the beginning, they wanted to say that we shot it down. And of course, the investigation starts. Then we start looking at what's on the pattern, things of this nature. And Iran had to admit that it did it and admit we did it. And it was a mistake of war, the fog of war, and it's unforgivable, but they're going to forgive and forget because they don't want to go against their own people. that on the military leadership side. But on the common Iranian citizen side, they're incensed. That's why you had crowds of students chanting for the Revolutionary Guards to, quote, let go of the country. And they're also calling Soleimani, saying he was a killer. So this Muslim scholar on Iranians said, basically, I think the Iranians had to ask themselves, what else have they, the regime, concealed? After admitting they did shoot down that Ukrainian jetliner. He said, keep in mind, it wasn't just the mistake. They denied it at first. Then finally, they're admitting it. Now they want to know what other falsehoods they've been fed. And again, as Senator Cotton alluded to a moment ago, this Muslim scholar points out something like 1,500 have been killed in recent protests in Iran before Soleimani's execution. By the way, speaking of that jetliner, Iran, even while, I wonder quite honestly what's going to happen to the guy who came out and admitted, yeah, we did it. I haven't seen many response reports on that, but the major who's been appointed to replace Soleimani is Major General Hossein Salami. I know they're very similar in sounding and name, but Soleimani was the terrorist leader that we took out, and the new leader of the military, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, the Quds Force, is Major Salami. And he's insisting that his country is still innocent of any and all accusations and tried to hide the causes of the downing of that Ukraine international flight last week. And then moving in with bulldozers to plow it over, denying that, and yet there's video showing that. Hours after the jetliner was shot down, you had people going through, picking up body fragments, retrieving bodies, other things. Nobody really put a cordon around the area to hold it off until a full investigation could be done. They were just allowed to go through and pick up what they wanted. And in some cases, they were there doing the terrible task of picking up bodies and body parts. But then after that, here came the bulldozers to kind of blade over everything, just cover it up. And yet Salami in his parliament yesterday said, we didn't touch anything. We didn't move the wreckage of the aircraft. We didn't change the scene. We didn't move the air defense system. And we did not alter the radar readings. Well, that's in direct opposition to what video has shown. Video clearly shows bulldozers pushing parts of the plane and debris to the side, covering it over, possibly some bodies still in the wreckage, and possibly body parts that might identify who was killed on board. And then they allowed others to just kind of go through the site, pick up what you want, souvenir, whatever you want. Nobody did anything to protect it. And in the midst of all of this, we still have mainstream media and liberals questioning why we decided to take out Soleimani and, in fact, blaming President Trump for the downing of that jetliner, quote, indirectly. But in the beginning, it was directly, stating that those folks were killed because Trump got us into a new war. That's what they want you to believe. And stating that the Trump administration claimed that Soleimani was preparing an imminent attack and basically lying, coming up with an excuse as to why we killed Soleimani. Senator Cotton is on the Armed Services Membership Committee. He has seen the details of, quote, the attack possibility. And he also had these remarks.
There's no doubt I've seen the intelligence that he was plotting something large and something very dangerous, whether it happened in a matter of weeks or a matter of days. And the question of whether an attack is imminent or not, Mark, I got to say, looks very different if you're a soldier sitting in Iraq than if you're some comfortable senator sitting behind armed guards in Washington, D.C. So I was very disappointed at all my Democratic colleagues in the Senate, I got to say, over the last few weeks, because if you got a chance to take a mastermind like Qasem Soleimani off the battlefield, you take it. And I commend the president for doing so. We should have done it a long time ago.
Yes, we should have. And as I said, there's word coming out today that perhaps the president had given the go to take out Soleimani something like 7 months ago, and we were looking for the proper time, opportunity, with minimum collateral damage. And with him deciding he could fly into Baghdad airport, he made it perfect for us. But yet you still have many on the mainstream media and so forth questioning, well, what do you mean an imminent attack? Senator Cotton put it exactly right. He said, first of all, if you have a chance to take off a mastermind like Soleimani off the battlefield, you take it. And his other point being, it's all a matter of relativity if it's imminent or not. If you're a soldier, a U.S. soldier in the war theater versus being a U.S. senator sitting behind a desk in D.C., but I've said repeatedly, I don't care if it was imminent, like it was going to happen the next day, the next week, next month. I say take him out simply because of what he's done in killing our troops. Yes, you could call it revenge, and I don't care. I have no tears lost for this guy and anyone else who's been going after our U.S. troops. But the ludicrous, inane, yep, 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 continues to come from the left. As now we're told we have a mad bomber in the White House pointing to President Trump. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
I started singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye and singing, this'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I know at least a couple of parents, maybe three different sets of parents, that have children going to the University of Michigan. I cannot wait to meet with them and ask them, are you aware of what they're teaching your students at Michigan? They've got a professor there who is now calling President Donald Trump, quote, the mad bomber in the White House. See, they had a demonstration over the weekend. They had, of course, the protest was basically against Trump administration and what we're doing in Iran. And it included the normal list of student groups, Valley Democrat Socialist of America, Arab Student Association, Huron Valley Democrat Socialist, College Democrats, University of Michigan, Collective Against White Supremacy, so forth and so on. And you got this professor, he's a Juan Cole. I wonder what kind of professor is he? I can't even find it right here, but I don't really care. But he's falsely claiming the U.S. is at war with Iran, adding, we're trying to destroy people's lives, and referring to us taking out Soleimani the other day as an assassination. I don't mind him calling it an assassination, but I think that's just fine with me. But he refers to the Trump administration saying we have a rogue government. He said we have a mad bomber in the White House, somebody who's erratic. Then we have a Secretary of Defense who's a lobbyist for the arms industry, and a Secretary of State who's a Kansas oilman. Yeah, he's throwing in also Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and saying that he, along with Secretary of Defense Esper and Trump, are also making war on the climate. Got to throw that in, too, because you get more folks showing up if you're saying we're going to make war against those fighting to ruin our climate at the same time. So they all get up there, they all have their little thing, and say that they are trying to put an end to U.S. imperialism. They had their day in the sun, or cold, whatever it was when they were doing it. And they were shouting that the U.S. is trying to destroy people's lives, and Trump is a mad bomber in the White House. So they get to do all of that. While in Iran, protesters in the street condemning their leadership are being shot at by Iranian forces. Not just rubber bullets, but live ammunition in some cases. Do you think these students understand the difference between what they're allowed to do here in this country and what would happen if they were in Iran protesting? You think they get it at all? Or are they just so wrapped up in their own little, small little snowflake world that they might be triggered by anything Trump does, but over there, that's okay. I'm gonna also spend some time before we wrap up this hour about the news coverage comparing Donald Trump to the Iranian leaders. It is off the scale. But they don't mind because, again, it's going after Donald Trump. But they had their little protest, and they can continue to have their protest. As long as they're not destroying things and threatening and trying to kill or hurt people, they're allowed to have a peaceful assembly. That's what they're trying to have in Iran, and yet they're being gunned down on the streets. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to come back with retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood for the latest assessment on what is happening in Iran, what are the next steps going forward, and I want another reaction from him as to us taking out Soleimani, whether or not we had evidence of an imminent attack or not. That's still to come.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDruryLaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
And we're down, we go.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
We welcome back retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, 20 years in the U.S. Marines, now with the Heritage Foundation. Colonel Wood, thanks for joining us again, sir.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Let me get to something that's just breaking. I've heard parts of it. I haven't had a chance to run down a lot of it. I don't know if you have, that now there's a report out that Trump gave the green light on taking out Soleimani something like 7 months ago. Have you seen that?
I have seen reporting of that. I haven't tried to confirm it independently, but I would not be surprised that, you know, these things evolve over time, right? There are very few instances where something magically happens. So we know that there are terrorist leaders operating around the world in various areas, and the intelligence community and the military have got enough people and assets, you know, to cover various regions, you know, drug cartels in Latin America and terrorists in the Middle East and those sorts of things. So I would not be surprised to hear definitively confirmed that this guy was on a list of options, things that could be done as opportunities would present.
And would it be that as long as he was inside Iran, that we thought we would either have too much collateral damage or that just it would be harder to, quote, justify, although I'll buy it any day, but mm-hmm. I had to wait for him to violate a U.N. order to stay in Iran?
Yeah, you know, court of public opinion or what have you, where we kind of have our own problems in that we get to be so good at things, people expect, you know, these precision strikes with no collateral damage whatsoever. So we can put a bomb through a window, you know, kind of thing, right? So as you're following these individuals around various countries, does the political environment support something like that? Can you get them in an isolated moment with exquisitely good intelligence. And in this case, he was in Iraq, outside of Iran, middle of the night, you know, not near a housing complex, not a lot of kids running around, those sorts of things. So the circumstances all have to come together that support, you know, taking this kind of an action where the U.S. Absolutely values human life, wants to minimize damage, not just to people, but even to buildings and those sorts of things. So I think this is probably the first time we had all these circumstances that came together and enabled this kind of a strike to get this kind of a strategic benefit in this war against terrorism.
And I continue to see, and it absolutely disgusts me, many mainstream Democrats and mainstream media keep asking, well, was there an imminent attack, or did you just say there's an imminent attack to have a reason to assassinate Soleimani?
And, you know, the criticism with the al-Qaeda business and even with Soleimani and others in the past is criticism of previous administrations that didn't take action when there was opportunity to do so, and then some kind of horrific terrorist attack occurs. And then there's this blame, you know, blame game and finger-pointing about what did we know when and why didn't we act sooner. In the case of President Trump, he knows something. There's an opportunity to act. He does so to prevent further harm based on 20 years of behavior by this criminal, right? Standing up Hezbollah, supporting the generation and stand up of various terrorist elements across that region, and Iran's 40 years of behavior of propagating terrorism and attacking consulates and embassies and assassinating Americans and other individuals from other countries. So, you know, Trump's not going to win if he's reliant on the goodwill of his critics, right? And I think he did the right thing at the right moment. And now we're seeing the benefit that comes with Iran really backpedaling, trying to figure out how it's going to deal with, you know, the criticism of shooting down a civilian airliner and all these sorts of things. So we have a good advantageous position, and it shows Iran that we're not going to tolerate this evil behavior anymore.
And I want to get into that, but before I do, I played before you joined us some comments from Senator Cotton over the weekend talking about this idea of imminent danger is mm-hmm. one thing if you're a soldier in Afghanistan versus a U.S. senator behind a desk
right.
in D.C.
Yeah, it's easy, right, to kind of pick and choose what day you think an attack might occur and when you have very clear information. But if we had an American family that was traveling in Jordan or someplace, right, or a church group that goes over to Israel or an American contractor supporting, you know, U.S. efforts in Afghanistan, and they had been assassinated, you know, where would that criticism be there in Washington, D.C.? So I think the senator's absolutely right, and your point absolutely right, that for people operating out in the world on the ground, risk is a very real thing. And in the political environment of D.C., it's more of an academic, you know, thing that people throw out for political effect.
You're listening to retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood with the Heritage Foundation, and you were talking about the jetliner being shot down. Originally, Iran kind of wanted to pass the blame around. Then somebody in Iran, and I haven't seen anything else from this guy, stepping forward and say, acknowledging we did it, and it, stating it was unforgivable, and yet now they've been bulldozing over the site just trying to cover it up.
They've really mishandled it. You know, you would think that they would understand their people, the region, the United States, NATO members, et cetera, better, having dealt with things for four decades. But the mounting evidence.
May I interrupt when you say that you think they would understand better? Is it that, or that they know damn well what it is and they're just going to go ahead anyway?
Well, I mean, that's a great point, and it kind of goes to the other thing about observed behavior. You know, for 40 years since the revolution in 1979, they have gotten away literally with murder, right?
Right.
With no negative effects. You know, the United States has tried to hem them in with sanctions and all, but everybody else just wants to do business with Iran and get oil and engineering, you know, contracts and those sorts of things. So their learned behavior is, we can do this sort of thing, and we're never held accountable. And finally, somebody does hold them accountable. And the evidence you just could not ignore. A civilian plane on a slow ascent, you know, big, slow-moving body. It's completely different than a tactical fighter coming into Iran, you know, evasive maneuvers, low signature and all that. So, I mean, I don't understand how they thought they could get away saying that it was a mechanical failure. You know, investigation teams now on the ground, refusal to hand over the black box or all the flight recorded data and all this other stuff. Somebody just said, look, we cannot you know, push forward with this.
Okay, so and, in the beginning with the, with their cover-up and denying it first, then the cover-up, I'm looking at some quotes from a Muslim scholar in Iranians over the weekend pointing out that the Iranians themselves are in the streets now asking what else has been concealed and saying this is the most fragile and precarious time since 1979. We have these folks in the streets shouting now, death to the Ayatollah and the Iranian leaders, and they're being fired upon by Iranian troops, often with live ammunition.
You know, international relations are no different than our personal engagements at family or in the workplace or anywhere else, right? That if you have a bully and nobody stands up to the bully, everybody thinks that this person is impervious, you know, that there's no way you can stand up against them. That's been Iran's experience for a long time. So now that the U.S. has stood up, took out Soleimani, who was viewed as untouchable, it opens up an opportunity for other voices to come forward, right? Where we've had, let's say, celebrities in the U.S. accused of sexual harassment and abuse, and nobody stood up. Once that dam is broken up, all of these people come forward and say, yeah, I was abused too. This is what's happening in Iran, is the people finally have an opportunity to see that the regime there is not untouchable. And so they are marching in the streets, as you have pointed out there, and the regime is actually more afraid of this public dissent than they are of the international community, because this is the basis for power in Iran. If they can't keep their people in check, then how do the mullahs stay in power?
Well, they
so this taking out Soleimani has had strategic ramifications, not least of which are the opportunity, the opening for common folks in Iran to march in the streets and voice their displeasure.
But they have no problem shooting down their own people. They've killed something like 1,500 in the recent protest.
Here's an example, right? And even in Baghdad, Iraqis who are protesting against Iranian influence in the Iraqi government, the Iraqi authorities have killed something like 500 or so Iraqis protesting. So again, regimes and people that want to hold on to power and are afraid of losing that are prone to use violence. And we've seen this somewhat in Hong Kong. We've seen it, you know, years ago in Tiananmen, right? So you've got these horrible regimes who hold power by fear, intimidation, and violence. And again, it's an opening for these folks. And if the United States isn't courageous in supporting what they're trying to do, diplomatically, rhetorically, news reporting, and all that stuff, I'm afraid it's going to get snuffed out like it did during the Obama administration, if you remember a few years ago, right? When these folks took to the streets and they didn't get any support. So if we want to see regime change or change behavior in Iran, these sorts of movements really need to be supported.
The official response from the White House has been we don't want a regime change, but we want a behavior change. But I think it still comes down to a full change, right?
Well, yeah, when you say regime change and geopolitics, you're thinking of armed intervention and, you know, like what we did in Iraq to get rid of Saddam Hussein, right? So we want to avoid that. Change has to come from within. Now, if the Ayatollah and his folks, you know, want to stay in power, they have to change their behavior, absolutely. But if you look at the political spectrum here in D.C. in the United States, who has actually come up on the net, you know, with tweets or some kind of support? A lot of silence in most of the political community, and it's only the White House that's been very open about supporting the desires of these people to finally have a voice.
All right. As always, sir, we appreciate your insight and spending the time with us. We'll do it again as we move forward, because there'll be many more chapters to this story.
Oh, it's not over yet.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
A lot.
Thank you. Retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood with Heritage Foundation. Always excellent information and insight on what is happening. We mentioned the media coverage of Trump in Iran right now and how the silence that exists among the leftists, as Lieutenant Colonel Wood was referring to. I want to get into that in more detail. We'll take a short break, and we'll come back with that point, because this is something that is inside our country and we could respond to. But the president's not getting any support because it's Donald Trump.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so
so lonely.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, let me break this down for you, and I'm angry to no end over this, how the mainstream media has been treating President Trump because of what we've been trying to do and taking out Soleimani and also protecting American lives, U.S. troops and those across the U.S. and also in other parts of the world. At one point, New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman was upset and compared the press treatment in Iran to the way the press is treated in this nation. President Trump the other day said to the leaders of Iran, "Do not kill your protesters. Thousands have been killed or in prison. The world's watching. And let your reporters roam free." That word, that few last words, "let your reporters roam free." Well, the New York Times White House correspondent, who's also a CNN analyst, fired back with this tweet. "Let reporters roam free," says the president, who routinely refers to the U.S. press as enemy of the people, to Iranian leaders. Comparing Trump's remarks of the press being the enemy of the people, and you know exactly what he's talking about, is because they're not doing a press journalistic job, they're doing hatchet jobs, and yet she wants to compare that to what's happening in the streets of Iran, shooting down protesters. And then you got the media coming forward with a David Frump. He's one of the publications, can't find it right now, but he said, "No American paid a price for President Trump's decision to kill Iran's Soleimani, but it looks like 176 other people did, including 63 Canadian citizens and many more Iranian nationals en route to Canada." In other words, blaming Trump for that Ukraine passenger jetliner shot down. Another one pointing out this from the Associated Press. "What had begun with a drone attack on Soleimani's motorcade at the Baghdad airport had suddenly rippled outward until dozens of Iranian students studying in Canada were dead." Again, blaming Trump for the Iranian jetliner shot down by Iran. Not us, but because we took out Soleimani, they were firing rockets at us, and they saw the jetliner, and they were so stupid they didn't realize it's not coming to attack us as a jetliner, and why they were allowing jetliners over that territory at that time, especially leave their airport, is beside me. But maybe they wanted that. Maybe someone thought, yeah, let's go ahead and do it and then claim it's a mistake or try to put the blame on the U.S. I don't know, because it's some bizarre thinking out there on the left and certainly in the midst of Iran as well. Andrew up in Chicago had sent me this note today. He said he had a friend attend a pro-Trump rally in Joliet, Illinois the other day. Trump was not in attendance, just a gathering of supporters. And here are the observations he sent along from his friend that went to the event in Joliet. He said, "I was totally surprised at the support from cars passing the intersection. Horns honking like crazy for 2 solid hours. Quite a few women there supporting the cause. Very windy and cold. Otherwise, might have been much bigger. My stepson didn't feel he could be there since he's a teacher and worried that if his picture was in the paper, it might be used against him. Would that be the case if it was a Biden rally?" That was a question posed by the guys sending this notice to Andrew about the protest. He said, "I also don't think there'd be a carnival atmosphere for any of the Dems." And he also points out the advertised counter-protest never materialized. Guess they figured there were enough snowflakes flying and they didn't need to add to the bad weather. That's very typical across this nation. There are Americans that would step out in the worst of the weather to support Trump. Those others, well, let's wait for a better day, and I don't want to get my hair messed up. But beyond that, it's the attitude that persists. And the attitude that embraces things like the New York Times reporter Haberman saying that our treatment of the press in this country is similar to the way Iran treats the press. They have no idea, but they do have an idea. They know exactly what they're saying. They're hoping you don't get it. They're hoping that you are so stupid that if you heard Trump refer to the press as the enemy, then you would accept the fact that he's being just as bad as Iran is to its press. No. In fact, one expert on Committee to Protect Journalists, Fourth Estate Editor, I should say, said, "I generally like Haberman's reporting, but it's absurd to compare the press in America to Iran, another symptom of the Trump infection." Obviously, there's no comparison between the Iran regime's treatment of the media and Trump saying some mean things. It's just outlandish. You're absolutely right. And, of course, no response from Haberman, Maggie Haberman. No response. She made her little point. I've told you before, I don't like Trump referring to the U.S. press as the enemy of the people, but I know why he's saying it. And that's because many in the press right now are not being journalists. They're not doing a journalist job. They're trying to do hatchet jobs, ambush, and they have yet to deal with facts. And if they were dealing with facts, they would recognize that taking out Soleimani the other day was a good thing. And yet, even on one of the talk shows over the weekend, Nancy Pelosi just couldn't muster the words to fully condemn it, couldn't fully talk about the terrorism that exists. It's just these guys, they're so worried about losing all their folks on the left that they walk such a thin line high above us, no parachute and no safety net, and I'm glad to see them face the danger. And they're going to pay for it coming November. All right, in the next hour, we will, of course, begin with news and commentary, but we're also going to get into an impeachment update, how Nancy is totally lost. And former FBI Director Comey wanted a nasty story told about Donald Trump, and he got his wish. Let your friends and neighbors know we're on the air. We'll be back at the top of the hour.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.